Okay, good morning, everyone. We're just trying to get a little squared away last minute, of course, with the equipment. And as soon as Nicole tells me we're ready to go, we'll start with the roll. For those online, we are a little light in attendance in the room, so it'll take us a moment to determine whether or not we have a quorum. Go ahead, Nicole.
Robert Mackey. Evelyn Pinsgord.
Here.
Sarah Batiste.
Deb Jepson.
Mary Alice Short. Debbie Gonzalez. Kayla Hansen. Nicole Klupfer.
Present.
Debbie Coxon.
Present.
Gary Newman.
Here.
Jennifer Elhard. Ryan Keel. Ashley Monroe. Kim Eames. Robin Winant. Jed Lowell. John Clendenin.
Here.
Jennifer Youngberg.
Here.
Walker Wheeler. Brad Crick.
Here.
Kat Williams.
Here.
Jeanette Altman.
Here.
Travis Brinzow. Richard Vachita. Britton Anderson, and I admitted the office. Joella Sparks.
Here.
Claudia Koch.
Yeah.
Pip Feezy.
Yes.
Is there anybody who joined us late or whose name I didn't call?
Yes, Debbie Gonzalez.
Thanks, Debbie. Can I ask who just joined?
Debbie Blevins.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm sorry for everyone online and in the room. We have 12 voting members, which is below a quorum. We can hold for a couple of minutes and see if anyone else joins us online or in the room before we start on the agenda and enact any business or take any actions. I think what we could do, if anyone has any questions just for general discussion, we could do that for 5 minutes and see if we get any other members. So I'm curious if anyone in the room or anyone online has any questions for anyone, for Claudia primarily. Gosh, you guys are quiet. Pips is thinking about it.
Okay, I'm sending something out to all the staff council. It's hard copy here in the meeting, but for people online, I'm just about to hit the send button. It's just a statement of intent for a working group for reorganization of staff council, and people here just got it in the meeting. That's coming up later in the meeting under in the agenda, so just wanted to prep people online. If you have a computer, I'm just about to send you something.
That's the question about that. Is this in place of whatever EMR is looking
for? It's an offshoot of it. We can talk about it in the agenda, but it was related. Yep.
Can I ask who just joined us?
This is Mary Alice. Sorry, I completely blanked out this morning's meeting.
No problem. Thanks. And Kat, you can vote for in place of Walker unless he arrives or until he arrives.
Okay, so Mary Alice, we're still one short of a quorum. Oh, here comes Walker. Yeah, but Walker's presence doesn't get us to a quorum. unfortunately.
Does a quorum have, does that mean everybody, you have to be up there?
No. The quorum has to be all members online or present with a voting right.
Okay.
How many do we need?
13?
Weren't we at 12 just a moment ago? And aren't we at?
Didn't Mary Sue just call in?
One of them was a voter for him.
I thought Mary Alice made 13.
No.
Yeah, this is Mary Alice.
Does that make 13?
No, I'm sorry. What's going on here is we have an alternate calling in who was able to vote on Walker's behalf. So Walker showing up did not increase our voting numbers, but we did just have someone else call in.
This is Mackie.
All right.
That gets us to quorum.
Thank you, Robert.
Robert,
you make a quorum.
Oh, thank you.
No, thank you.
A procedural question from someone online. This is Kate Sunwood.
Hello. I'm sorry. Whoever's speaking, please speak up.
How does one mute their phone if they don't have a mute on the phone? Is there, like...
It's either #6 or *6. I can't remember which one it is.
Okay. I'll try that. Thanks.
So try to talk again and see if we can hear you.
I can't hear you.
Yeah.
We can't hear you, so it must have worked.
You know how to unmute the phone, too, in case...
Yeah, it's either *6 or #6, whatever one she didn't use before.
Okay, well, so now that we have a quorum, let's get underway. We've done the roll, and we have the agenda for staff council meeting number 232 in front of you all.
Second.
We have a motion to approve the agenda as distributed and a second. Do we have any discussion or questions or comments? All right, then, hearing none, all those in favor of the agenda as distributed for 232, please say aye.
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 All those opposed? Hearing none, thank you. We have an agenda. The next item is approval of the staff council meeting's minutes for meeting 231.
They need to be amended to include Jennifer Reynolds as a guest.
All right.
And then under Section 5, remarks by Chancellor Rogers, just a typo, the fourth line has budge instead of budget.
Yeah, I'll.
As amended. Do we have a second?
Second.
All right, we have a motion to approve the minutes for meeting 231 as amended and a second. Any further comments, questions, or discussion? All right, then. All those in favor of approval of the minutes for 231, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Hearing none, thank you. We have minutes as amended. Item 2, we have no pending actions. Item 3 is public comment, and I understand we have a guest today. Leo, you want to come on up?
Good morning, everyone. My name is Lael Oldmixon, and I officially work in the Office of Admissions and the Registrar. However, I'm here on behalf of the United Way, and I appreciate you letting me have a couple of minutes to talk about it. My husband, Mark, and I are the co-chairs again this year, and we've been charged by the Chancellor to continue the United Way campaign for this year and to work on increasing participation. So, last year, 198 individuals gave from the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Our total was approximately $70,000, just a little bit shy of that. And we were the second largest donor organization in the city of Fairbanks. Can anybody guess who was the first? It was the hospital. Ding. And the interesting thing about that is that they had doubled the amount of participants, and they clearly doubled the amount that they were able to give. And the biggest part of it wasn't that it was the doctors that were giving. It was that more people across the board gave, including nurses, technicians, front desk administrators. And so I think it really shows that collectively the organization can be stronger with than just a few donors, though we appreciate every donation that comes in. So our goal this year is to increase participation. We have approximately 3,000 employees here at the university. We think that we should be able to get more than 198 folks donating to the United Way, as these folks who benefit from the United Way are our neighbors, and they're our friends, and they're our there are 20 agencies in the United Way, and we're hoping that we can encourage folks, new donors, to give $20, $1 per agency. And if folks have given in the past, to go ahead and give again and match what you've given or give a greater amount, thinking about how far that dollar does actually stretch. We also are looking for folks to join us on the United Way Planning Committee. Claudia is actually on the committee with us. And essentially what we're trying to do is get more folks involved so that we can maybe have a little bit more follow-up and a little broader reach than what Mark and I can actually do as individuals. Very quickly, I just want to mention, again, the payroll deduction, the process of being able to give, it's super easy. People can give payroll deduction, cash, check, credit card, and you can donate to the Community Care Fund, which designates the dollars out to those 20 agencies. You can give to a specific United Way member agency. So, for example, if the Red Cross is your favorite agency, you could just designate 100% of your donation to them. Or you can give to any 501c3 in the state of Alaska. For example, if you are friends of the Mushers, and that's the name of a nonprofit, then you can give your donation to them, and the United Way will take care of that donation for you. Any questions about this?
I'm calling from Nome. I have a question.
Yes.
I'm sorry, caller, will you please identify yourself? Oh, my name is Kirsten Bay. I'm not a member of the staff council. I'm just an employee of the university.
Thank you.
You said that there were 20 organizations. So just could you explain that? That sounds to me like those are Fairbanks organizations. If you could just explain a little bit more about what's the benefit from somebody not in Fairbanks participating in this. I know at the end you talked about designating some different organization and the United Way would take care of that, but I'm just wondering why I and Nome should be interested in donating to this campaign.
That's a fantastic question, and I really appreciate that you asked it because it is really important to us that folks out at the site campuses are also participating in this campaign. First of all, the ability to donate to any 501c3 allows you to identify these nonprofit organizations within your communities that might benefit, and the United Way has the ability to reach those communities through your donation. If there are United Way agencies in Nome, we can funnel that money through the United Way as well. And you would just have to identify those folks on the form. You can also give, and this is another example of a 501c3, the UAF, UA Foundation, KUAC, they all count as part of that 501c3 category. So if you have a particular fondness for any of those programs, you could donate to UAF through the United Way. And again, it shows the participation. If it's for the Red Cross or if it's for Big Brothers Big Sisters or Boys and Girls Club, there are some of these agencies that reach, like the Boys and Boy Scout Council, I believe, reaches far beyond Fairbanks. I think it reaches way out to Nome, in fact. And I'm not 100% positive, but I just went to a meeting at their building, and I do recall them saying that. So, you know, I think it can really just depend on what your preference is. And again, some people just want to give directly to an agency, and we completely 100% support that. The benefit of this for the United Way is that a lot of these agencies get a much broader recognition and much more awareness out that they actually exist because the United Way carries them as the umbrella. I'll leave some forms in the back, and whatever's left over, if you all could just send them back to my office, that would be really great.
You bet.
Thanks, everyone. I really appreciate your support.
Thank you for coming.
Hey, Lael, this is Maggie. I got one question for you. If we're at a rural site, how do we get the forms?
Well, you can either give online through the United Way website, which is, UnitedWayTV.com. Very interesting name. Or I can mail you a hard copy form.
If we give online, can we do the employee deduction?
No, you cannot.
How do we set up an employee deduction if we want to?
You would need to use the form. I could also scan and fax forms.
Okay, I'll just contact you, but are there any plans in the future to make those forms more available maybe online through human resources or something?
Absolutely. In fact, we have been working with OIT to develop the programming so that we can do this internally. I mean, we all know that the carbon copy paper is sort of a day of the past, and so it does seem a little ridiculous that we're using these hard copies, but we haven't found the best method internally, and we are working with Advancement and also OIT to resolve that issue.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
No problem.
All right. We have a couple of other members in the audience. Is there any other public comment?
Yeah.
All right. The next on the agenda, unless there's anyone online for public comment? All right, hearing none, we'll move on to item 4 of the agenda, the officer reports. I am going to tell you that I spent 20 hours in airports and airplanes yesterday getting in last night, and I'm not all here. I'm a little more scattered than usual. And honestly, for the officer's report, we did Staff Alliance met last week while I was traveling. I did call in on that, and we had some discussion, in particular about the Board of Regents meeting. Some of the specifics will come out in the other agenda items, but I think we're in a new, I think the game's been changed a little bit. And at the statewide level, so I'll be able to give you more on that. I've been gone so much in the last month, it's kind of crazy, and I don't have my feet on the ground. I have a meeting with President Gamble November 1st, and that's of course prior to the November 6th meeting where the Board of Regents approve their budget request for FY14. So hopefully I'll get some more information from him then, and get it out to you before our next meeting. Unless you have any specific questions on any of the agenda items, I'm going to hand it off to Claudia. All right.
I'm going to talk a little more about the Staff Alliance meeting. Like Joella said, we met last week. The dispatch blog is out there. Go check it out. We need to put more stuff on. We're still working on the work-life surveys. We're reviewing all the answers. People were putting comments on top of just answering, and there were 200 pages of comments. So we're coming out with in different categories and then roll them out so we can put those out on top with some kind of recommendation what we're going to do with the results. So it's not just results, but with something to it. And then after Joella left the Staff Alliance meeting, President Gamble joined us, and he gave us an update on what's going on in his administration. He was talking about how he met with the D.C. delegation down in D.C. with Senator Murkowski, Baggage, and Representative Young, and he had some good conversation. Nobody seems to know what's going on in regards to sequestration. There are mixed signals if it's going to happen or not. also President Gamble's position right now, and that's what he told his cabinet is, that we wait and see what the state is doing and react to reality and not to a prediction. So he doesn't want to spread any panic, but so we wait and see. That is the position right now. He talked about that the budget is going forward as was briefed to the Board of Regents and said there was a staff pay raise in there, but he did not state a number. So, but he said that 3.5% was a good number to him, but he didn't say it. One update he gave on the tuition benefits was that it's in legal review right now, and he wants to go and see how it affects staff in the middle of the semester to see if it's going to roll out in the spring semester or in the fall semester. We also talked about making recognition and awards more meaningful for staff, and President Gamble fully supports that and said that we should come up with, Staff Alliance should work on something, and he would put resources behind it if we came up with a meaningful award system. So Staff Alliance will have the compensation working group start working on that. Then, of course, he talked about SDI and said that he got a strong endorsement from the Board of Regents for what it's done so far. And now in phase two, needs to be categorized and seen what needs to be changed and what we can do better. And he said they're making a lot of progress with high schools. And one initiative they're talking about are discussing are free online courses for the first and two, for the 1 and 2 year courses. So students can go and parents can see what to expect of college and how the classes are. There will be no financial loss out of this because they still have to come and take the courses once they get to UAF. So I thought it was an interesting idea.
Hmm.
The system governance executive position and the coordinator position are open and being reviewed right now. So hopefully we have somebody in that pretty soon. And that was my update from Staff Alliance. Any questions?
All right, then. We've heard a couple beeps online. Has anyone joined us that's not given us their name, or including Chancellor Rogers?
Joelle, this is Martin Klein. I'm listening.
Hey, Martin. A blast from the past.
Yeah. I may not be here all the meeting, but
okay.
I am for now.
All right. Anyone else online?
Hey, Joelle. This is Kayla Hansen.
All right, Kayla. Well, for those online, the Chancellor has just joined us, and he is up next. Good timing.
Thanks, and good morning. Well, I just got back from a trip visiting with alumni and donors and foundations, but the most important part of the trip was the launch of the research vessel Sikulyaak, and it really is remarkable what staff and faculty have done over 40 years to bring that ship into being. If you haven't seen the video of the launch, find it and see it. It's pretty spectacular seeing a 80-meter-long ship launched sideways into the water into the Menominee River in Wisconsin. They'll finish the ship next year, and we should have it in Seward by December. So quite an achievement and really something significant for the School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences. With the new snowfall, I want to just highlight the fact that our number one injury at UAF is slips, trips, and falls. And everybody assumes that's because, well, there's snow and people slip on the snow. But in fact, more commonly, it's because people weren't paying attention to where they were walking. As happened in our office suite, a person recently walking along and there was construction equipment. She was watching the construction equipment instead of watching where her feet were and fell off a curb and injured herself. And so, you know, it's hard to prevent those kinds of injuries from either risk management or the health and safety office, or it actually comes down to every individual paying attention when you're moving around. And so we're certainly looking for ideas for how to highlight that. The president has asked all three chancellors to really focus on reducing those injuries in particular, the slips, the trips, and the falls that cause the highest volume of accidents at UAS. So certainly would be interested in any thoughts from anyone on staff council for what we can do what we can do there. I assume that, those of you who listen to KUAC all know repeatedly over the last few days that this is Pledge Week and encourage people to make their pledges. Sherry and I will be on this afternoon from 5 to 7, encouraging calls. We're just about completed with the FY14 budget work. The President will be bringing that to the Board of Regents on November 7th. Has made some reductions in the amounts for specific increments requested by UAF, UAA, UA Southeast to try to bring it within overall guidance with the governor. And so we're trying not to ask for more than we asked for last year. Last year we had particular success in the budget, and we hope to repeat that. My appointment letter to the Student Diversity Task Force went out this morning. It got held up while I was traveling. That the Student Diversity Task Force will be looking at essentially all of our programs for students to say what can we do to improve, really regardless of the race, gender, ethnicity, religion, et cetera, of students. What can we do to improve student services? This really comes out of the OMAD office issue earlier this year. I've asked Claudia as the staff council rep to participate on that committee. And with that, this being my first day back in 10 days, I don't have a whole lot beyond, but would be glad to answer questions or take comments from any members of staff council.
Chancellor, with regard to slips, trips, and falls, I noticed this morning, this is walking along Fairbanks Street by West Valley, so this isn't UAF, but I've seen this at UAF. I assume the borough or the city, maybe the school, has scraped the sidewalks, and suddenly it becomes a lot more slick. Walking on snow is a lot easier than walking on sidewalks that have been scraped with a metal scraper. But I've seen it happen at UAF where, the quad will get scraped and then it'll be a few hours before we get any gravel in there. And so I guess that's one thought, I think, to reducing slips, trips, and falls. I've noticed that a lot over the last few years.
I've noticed that same issue. And the challenge is that if we wait if we don't get the snow off immediately, it gets packed down, and that creates a problem for accessibility for people in wheelchairs and also creates a bigger challenge later in the year. And so I know Facilities has been working to try to get sanding in immediately behind it, but they're particularly in the springtime when we do that scraping, we can end up with really slick conditions. So I'll highlight that with them and see if we can do something that would try to ensure that we're sanding or putting in gravel immediately behind that scraping. Thanks.
I do have a comment about slips, trips, and falls.
I hope so.
I can give you a lot, but I'm only going to give you a piece. Noticing this morning, I think a lot of it has to do with education and awareness overall through the system, because just coming in this morning into the Wood Center entrance, somebody's taken a very diligent job of removing all the snow off of the patio part of the entrance, but where they dumped all the snow is on the stairs.
Which is more dangerous.
Which is more dangerous than having it be on the patio, exactly. So if you go out, on the way out of the Wood Center, if you look off to the right towards the loading dock, all of the snow from the patios ended up just on the stairs and below. So now you're basically walking up a hump to get up onto the. So I think it's a lot of it's just awareness overall. What do we do with the snow? Where does it go? How do we handle it? Who's doing it? There's a lot of awareness that needs to happen throughout the system, so that we can actually get this stuff cleared and not actually create a bigger hazard in the process.
All right. Claudia?
Sure.
Because I drive over to Westridge all the time, and I'm on the ski patrol and ski, and so I see that you started doing the jumps for the jump park.
Yes.
Is there going to be a wall or something so people who are a little don't know what they're doing and jump over and end up on the road? I was just thinking this morning.
Yes, so and that you see that they're fenced off right now, so that they're not in use. We engaged the National Terrain Park Council to help us do the design for the Nanuq Terrain Park. And so one of the things they've done is essentially calculate maximum velocity off each of those jumps to ensure that's mostly to to deal with potential injury to ensure that people can't get going fast enough for a certain level of injury. In addition, there will be a double run of fencing similar to what you see at the bottom of a competitive ski jump, designed to take a person hitting it at 50 miles an hour. It wraps around and grabs them. There'll be two layers of that that will also define the cross-country ski trail that'll be right along the edge. So essentially, you'd have to be going 50 miles an hour after hitting the first one, which physically is impossible. So I think we'll be good there. But that was something we really, you know, this is a challenging issue. We know that injuries are possible whenever you do an activity like that. So what we're trying to ensure is that we've done everything we can to reduce to create a park that has the maximum safety protection. So the other kinds of things they've done, for example, one of the features that is very common in a terrain park is a rail, two posts with a rail between it. Well, underneath the rail will be plexiglass on both sides, so you can't fall off and come down under the rail and wrap yourself around the post, which is another very common injury in a terrain park. So that's another one that we have active measures to prevent that kind of injury. So we think between each of those, there will still be enough opportunity for students to really have fun on there, but we're protecting from the road, we're minimizing the jumps, and trying to do what else we can. And each will have to do a safety video before produced by Burton Snowboards before going on. So that's one of the reasons we didn't open it last year. We had started to do the work. We learned that there was more we could do to try to improve the safety awareness.
Thank you. Just one more question. You talked about the OMAD board. So what's the status of the Women's Center?
Still waiting. I have not received sufficient nominations to flesh that one out. And so having been gone the last 10 days, that's high on my agenda to deal with right away.
Thank you.
Walker?
Chancellor Rogers, this is Robert Mackey from Kotzebue. How are you doing today?
Hi, Robert. How are you?
I'm doing fine. One of the things that you used to talk about a lot that I haven't heard mentioned in a while, and seeing how we're getting down to, one of the things that I think really lags behind on us is that we've got infrastructure that's 50, 60, 70 years old, and you've talked a lot about deferred maintenance and the need to bring these buildings up to modern standards for energy efficiency and a lot of the costs that we have coming out of here. It's mixed into legacy costs as much as labor is. UAA and UAS, on the other hand, have buildings that are 10, 20, at the most really about 30 years old. My question to you is, do you see a role for staff council? And if you do see a role, what would you like to see us do in order to try to emphasize the need for UAF that's quite unique compared to the other MAUs in bringing us up to a level of sustainability that would allow us to actually move forward rather than always trying to catch up on the cost of the infrastructure and lagging behind in other areas? I hope that was clear.
Yes, it was. And one of the reasons that perhaps I'm not talking about it as much is that we're doing so much. With the governor's commitment 4 years ago to begin funding deferred maintenance, a core level of $37.5 million a year, of which UAF is receiving 22 of that, essentially based on a formula that addresses the issue of age. We've had a lot of work going on. This year, the biggest pieces are the planning and design for the combined heat and power plant, and then the planning for the West Ridge revitalization, which is essentially the major deferred maintenance projects on the LV, O'Neill, Irving 1 and 2, and Arctic Health buildings. So a whole series of buildings that we're looking at as a package, together with People saw a lot of dirt move this summer. That was largely out of that same deferred maintenance pot where we replaced a lot of the sewer systems. So where the role for staff council, I think, is that each year we've asked for, in addition to the 37.5, a chunk of 50 to 100 million to help us catch up a little more. And, you know, this is an election season. We've got legislators are interested in getting everyone's vote, and so they're much more attentive to what people say the next several weeks. So the opportunity to talk about the need for consistent funding and really some catch-up funding for deferred maintenance would be a real important role for every member of the university community. I'm really pleased at how much progress we are making. You know, the facilities office at UAF, we're doing triple the amount of annual construction that we were doing 3 years ago. That's both.
Thanks. Some specific things I was thinking about was when I used to work on main campus, the windows in lower campus down there at McIntosh and Stevens and Nerland are old single-paned windows that are wood. And just little things like switching out those windows. I think Eielson has some of those old windows still in place as well. Are there any plans to upgrade the facilities on sort of kind of that low-hanging fruit around campus?
Yes, we contracted with Siemens Industries as part of a State of Alaska project to do energy audits on a whole series of buildings. And at the Board of Regents meeting last month, the board approved the first phase of the work that was recommended by the audits, roughly $6 million worth of work that will be done by Siemens and paid for with the energy savings over an average period of about 7 or 8 years. Some of them are faster, some of them are slower to pay off, but the package as a whole is about in that 7 or 8 year range, if I remember correctly. And so they have looked at the low-hanging fruit. Surprisingly, it's not as often in heating. It is in electrical savings. Because of the nature of our combined heat and power plant, our biggest challenge is on the electrical side, and to the extent we can lower electrical demand, that's our fastest payback.
And I'm sorry, I've got one more follow-up, and then we'll leave you alone. Expanding that also to the rural campuses. Here at Chukchi, our building was built in 1978, which means that we've probably reached the life of our building envelope, and we're probably not alone in that. I think that Nome's campus, I think that Bethel's campus probably are in the same boat. Are you looking at expanding these projects out to the rural campuses?
In fact, that $6 million did include a couple of rural campuses, campus projects that were included in the package. I don't recall off the top of my head, but Scott Bell, who's here, may be able to speak to which. It seems to me it was Northwest Campus was the one that we audited. Scott, maybe you could speak to what we're doing on that project.
Sure. I'm head of facilities at UAF, and we are looking actually, in addition to the $6 million, is an additional $750,000 that's being directed toward projects at the Kuskokwim campus. And I believe the Nome campus, but I can't quite remember. It's Nome or Kotzebue. I'm sorry, I don't have that information with me. But that's also being funded as an energy conservation project where the work will be paid back in energy savings. And we continue to go through, and whenever we go and need to do work on a building envelope, you know, the insulation layer, the walls, the roof, and if it's an elevated building, the floors, floor systems, we're bringing them up to very energy conservation standards. There are standards in the country that say, you know, if you're in a certain climate such as ours, well, it varies by climate throughout the U.S., but in our climate, there's certain standards for insulation levels. We are trying to beat those by 30% on all new work and all retrofit work on our rural campuses, because the cost of energy is so high that it really benefits us to put more money into insulation and vapor barriers and windows and doors to really make those tight and efficient buildings.
Thanks, Scott. And just put a face with the name. I actually welcomed you off the plane when you came to Kotzebue a few weeks ago. I was on my way out when you were on your way in, and we made that little introduction.
I remember that. It was, yeah, thanks, though.
Not a problem. Just a concluding remark on that. I'm glad to hear that. Right now, the gasoline and diesel both here in Kotzebue are almost $8 a gallon. And I think that that's probably going to be a big bang for the buck. Now, Kotzebue is the most expensive site that we have when it comes to energy costs. At least that's my understanding. But I think that it's essential to really look at the sustainability of the campuses and make them as energy efficient as possible, because you save so much in energy costs over the long term and putting these energy savings into the campuses up front. Here at Chukchi, we've been using our Title III funds and some of our other funds for solar alternative energy supplementation for the campus. But, you know, that's a drop in the bucket. We really need a lot more. And so this is actually going to be one of my last meetings on staff council. So one of the things that I really wanted to do was bring that to the attention and really put it on the table of the staff council as well as the chancellor and Scott, since you were here also. And I thank you all for the efforts that y'all are doing. And we've seen a lot more effort in the last 3 or 4 years to really upgrade our campus. And I want to thank you publicly, but also I want to voice that there's still a lot that needs to be done. So thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Walker, did you have a question? We'll take one more for the chancellor.
Sure. I'll try to keep it brief. What was called to my attention yesterday, an employee was having an issue specifically in the library. They were breathing in, I believe, what they described as diesel fumes that were being drawn in through the air vents. And it's been a frustrating thing because it's continued to happen for years. We've contacted environmental health and safety. Every time we have an issue, we contact a single point in the building as well. And I think we all know what the problems stem from. It's vehicles that are idling or that are running by, either doing snow removal or facilities vehicles that are there to do work, or the mail truck that comes in. There are several areas that it can cause a problem. And unfortunately, this person had to leave her area because it was bad enough that she was getting a headache from it. So I had advised her to come to cleaner air and hang out there for a couple minutes and then go back and see whether or not the fumes had dissipated. So it's a larger health and safety issue, and I'm just asking for advice on what we could do to remedy this. I don't think it's, you know, just the library that's going to end up being in this situation.
Well, I think that, you know, we try to make sure that contractor vehicles and facilities vehicles don't idle next to a building. Scott's here, so he'll take that reminder back to the facilities crew. Certainly when we're operating equipment, that's more of a challenge, because we in fact do need to to move by. So, you know, it may be we need to relook at where our air intakes are and get them up higher. But I saw Scott stand up, and he may have some comments on this as well.
And one other thing I'd like to think of, what she had mentioned, and we've been doing some research here, the snow machine competition, the electric snow machine competition, one of the ideas that she had kind of brought forth was, hey, can't they, you know, run an electric vehicle that isn't going to be sending that out? So I don't know if that's feasible or not, or if they exist, but it was one of the things that she had commentary on.
That's interesting, because I had the exact same thought for the same reason, and had made a note to check and see if there is an opportunity to consider using an electric or battery-powered vehicle. Scott?
Yeah, this has been an ongoing problem, and again, we tend to have to re-educate our crews every fall as the winter comes, and the fumes tend to stay closer to the ground. And I apologize for not getting things the word spread around as soon as we could have to stop this from occurring. But I'll go back and look at some of these ideas as far as electric vehicles. Sometimes they lack as much power as internal combustion engine fired. But another opportunity may be in burning propane or another fuel that doesn't put out the heavy fumes that diesel and sometimes gasoline engines do. So it's on the list to take a look at.
I appreciate you raising the issue. You know, sometimes people think that these smaller issues, you know, do you want to really take up staff council time or meeting time? We're now taking 5 to 15 minutes at the beginning of every cabinet meeting to talk about safety-related issues. What's going on? What can we do? We think that's part of how you change a culture of safety is to be talking about it. So thanks for raising the issue.
All right. Well, thank you, Chancellor Rogers and Scott. So the next item on the agenda are the governance reports. I understand that Jennifer Reynolds let us know that she didn't have a report for this meeting. And Mari, unless she's online, is not in the room to give a report. So we'll move on from the governance reports to unfinished business. And Walker, do I hand you item 7A?
Sure. All right. So we've been conducting business on the election in EMR. We have the application that Brad Havel had originally written. And we've sent out, is it 3 emails now to notify people in odd units that they need to, you know, find someone to nominate themselves. If you haven't gotten those, I'm not sure why you wouldn't have, if you're in an odd unit. If you haven't, though, let us know, because we want to make sure that everybody is getting these. Currently, nominations are scheduled to close this Friday at, I believe it's at midnight. So far, we have about 37 nominations. 12 of those nominations, people have accepted. 12 of them, people have said no to. And 13, we have yet to receive a response from the individuals. One of the things that we changed kind of early on in the process is we've added the feature for someone to be able to say no as well as yes, so that we don't have to continue to contact them because we have no understanding because they haven't responded. So a person can now decline or accept, and we don't have an issue there. The other thing, as far as supervisor approvals, there have been 10 people who had accepted that provided supervisor information. We have what looks like 6 positive responses from that. So the supervisors have said yes, and 4 that haven't had a chance to respond. So that's kind of the current status.
So one item that we need to, that I want to bring up right at this point is the turnover in our the chairs of our committees, our permanent committees, as I understand it, and I'm putting you both on the spot here. As I understand it, Walker, that you are not running for election.
You are correct.
So you'll step down in December.
I sure will.
And Mary Sue has also stepped down as chair of staff affairs, though Nicole, I believe, has accepted, no, not staff affairs, advocacy, because Deb Gonzalez is stepping down as advocacy committee chair, and Nicole Klopfer is taking her place. And Brad, you are stepping down, but you're in an even unit, so you're not up for election.
No, I'm in the library unit. I am up for election.
Oh, and are you running for re-election? But
I am.
All right. So for those of you on, yes, Mary Sue's resigned effective immediately. So that is 100% turnover in the chairs of our permanent committees. So that's something I want you to think about. We are in need of a staff affairs chair.
Yep.
Then hopefully Brad and Walker will work with anyone else interested in taking over the Rural Affairs and Elections Membership and Rules Committees. This has caused Claudia quite a state of panic. My years in governance, certainly it's a concern to me, but I think we go through stages of burnout. People that have been active and involved for a long time say, okay, I can't do it anymore. We also know that there's a lot of people taking on additional duties in their jobs. So food for thought, we'll talk about it some more in the November and December meetings.
But for staff affairs, please think right now because
yes.
We don't have anybody in it.
Yes, and actually there's a staff affairs meeting scheduled for Friday that we'll cancel if we don't have a chair.
Walker, you mentioned that nominations close on Friday. When do the elections happen?
The elections start the following Monday. We'll make sure we get all of the I's dotted and T's crossed during the day, and then we'll have it open up. So it'll be sometime during the day, not necessarily right away in the morning.
And when do the elections close?
The elections are going to close, I believe it's the 23rd of November. Is it the 23rd or the 26th?
The 23rd, I think, is the day after Thanksgiving.
It's I believe, the day after the staff the next staff council meeting.
That would be the 21st, I think.
Is that the 21st? I have it somewhere here in notes.
Yeah, I'll get it really quickly.
Okay.
I have one question.
Certainly, Robert, go ahead.
Do we have, are there any units for which we know do not have any candidates at this point that are up for election? Because I've been recruiting very hard for my unit, and I would hate to see my position go unfilled because nobody has filed.
So the only unit that does not have any nominations at present is Unit 7. Now, you're in unit number one, is that correct, Robert?
That is correct, and I contacted a lot of people to try to encourage people to run.
Oh, we saw, and it appears that there are five nominations from there, and I don't know if they've all accepted or not at this point in time.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
And thank you for that. One quick follow-up question to you, Robert.
Sure.
Did you not intend to submit a nomination for yourself?
Yeah, I am not running for re-election.
Okay.
I'll get into those when we get into the kind of the roundtable later. But no, I did not. I did not self-nominate myself.
Okay, I'll remove you from there then.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions then on staff council odd unit elections? All right. Well. Move on to item B, the healthcare benefit update. Kat, you're here, correct? She was on earlier, okay. Gary, did you participate in the last, it was SHCC? Okay. Go ahead, please.
Well, I put the meeting notes pretty extensive on the last staff healthcare committee meeting. We had one brief one before I wasn't officially on, but they're basically going over the task force report and made some recommendations that then are going up to JACC, which were meeting yesterday and the day before, I think, in Anchorage. And JACC hasn't weighed in on all of these recommendations yet. So I put the meeting notes. I thought they went over the task force report, and I believe you've all received the task force report as well, which made for light reading. I think once JHCC gets done, then we'll all weigh in. I know we were trying to do a kind of a survey, a quickie survey of staff to see what their impressions were of the various recommendations. So there's lots going on. By December, they pretty much have to decide on what we're doing going forth into the next fiscal year for healthcare coverage. Basically the devil's in the details on all these, and feel free to contact. But I'm not up on where we are on the survey on that, whether we're waiting for JHCC to get done. That was kind of my understanding, and maybe Joella has a little more information on that.
Right. I think that Melody's, for information of everyone, Melody Munson and Gwenna Richardson are the staff representatives to the Joint Healthcare Committee. And yes, they are in two-day meetings this week, and in part to discuss the suggestions coming out of the healthcare task force. Also, for the record, Gary Newman, there have been changes in our representation to the Staff Healthcare Committee, UAFs. Gary Newman and Deb Coxon Mary Sue Dates and Deb Gonzalez are our representatives. The first two are our voting representatives, and the second two are our alternates to that committee. This is something that we will have to move very fast on. I would keep your ear to the telegraph wire once JHCC, depending on how they act on the task force suggestions. Melody may come out to the Staff Healthcare Committee and Staff Alliance saying we need feedback right away because we are disagreeing with the JHCC direction and so on. Keep in mind that Staff Healthcare Committee has a voice to the statewide administration. So while JHCC, is the point supposedly on healthcare benefit input to the administration, Staff Healthcare also has a voice. So keep your eye out if we need to move quickly in order to present opposing opinions to the opposing JHCC to the administration. Any questions on the healthcare benefit update?
Just briefly, I think our next meeting is next Monday.
Okay.
I just wanted to thank Gary and the others who are on this because there's so much information that comes out about healthcare. And just getting up to speed on the topic is slightly mind-boggling, and I haven't had the time or kind of focus to be able to get to those details myself. So, just really appreciate your reports back and your time.
You're welcome. What I actually started to do is I actually dug out my 2003 Healthcare Review Committee notes, and they're about this thick. And I'm another more light reading to trying to see how we got to certain places. And where we are now, because there seems to be no historical remembrance of that. I think a lot of that was held with Mike Humphrey when he left.
Yeah, and that is so important. And again, thanks for doing that. You're a good voice on that.
Yes, I second Pip's on that one. If there are no other questions, the next is C, the employee tuition benefit update. I have not received a copy or a blessing. Well, you said that President Gamble indicated that General Counsel was reviewing their changes to the tuition benefit update. Again, I meet with President Gamble on the 1st. It's my intent to ask him for a copy formally. excuse me, because governance has not seen the final copy from the administration. Staff resources website update. Now, as I understand it, Mary Sue and Jennifer were the lead on that, with Mary Sue stepping down. Is anyone else willing to step up for that? That is a review of the HR website. Nicole?
I'll do it. I'm familiar with it, so
awesome.
It shouldn't be a problem.
All right. Thank you, Nicole. I think all that airplane air is catching up with me. Sorry. The next item, then, is the compensation increase. You heard Claudia's statements that the president looks favorably on a 3.5%, but has indicated that the FY14 budget request has not been finalized. Maybe I'll get a sneak peek on the 1st. We'll see. Item F, the grievance process review, the mediation program update. The grievance process review, I previously told you that the two representatives to Staff Alliance from UA Southeast, May and Gwenna, had agreed to take point on reviewing the grievance process. President Gamble and Donald Smith have given us the person they wish us to work with on that, and to my knowledge, there's been no activity on this yet. I'll pass that on as soon as we get that. The mediation program update kind of blends into item G, the Women's Center and OMAD issue. So let me clarify something here. I think I might have been confusing at our last meeting. Claudia and I met with Chancellor Rogers in pre-staff, and he indicated that, and I'm going to get the names incorrectly, but I hope you get the rough idea, that in the Justice program, there was a line item request from UAF for an alternative dispute resolution program or a center within the Justice Department, and that might be a place to house the mediation program. So that's contingent on several things. One, that the line item isn't vetoed out by statewide, because statewide still could do that, still could remove that request. The last version that we saw had it in there. Two, the legislature could take that out, and three, the governor could take that out. So it was an item that the chancellor brought up. We were talking about the mediation program and the future of it, and he brought up the Justice Department's request and the possibilities with it. So that's just talking about the future. As it stands now, the mediation program is still within the Diversity and Equal Opportunity Office within the Chancellor's office. So I just wanted to be sure that everyone clearly understood there is still a mediation program, and it is still within Mae Marsh's office in the Chancellor's. Okay. And then you heard the Chancellor bring up that the letters went out to the members of the Diversity Task Force. I meant to ask him his intent with CDAC as a part of that, the Chancellor's Diversity Action Committee, but I didn't. As I understand it, CDAC met for the final time a couple of weeks ago and is waiting to see what this task force comes up with for the next steps for CDAC. In the Women's Center, I encourage you to consider membership on the Women's Center's advisory group. It's essentially intended to be a small advisory council for the Women's Center to help revitalize their mission and set programming goals and so on, and be an advocate for the Women's Center. That came out of what was a decision to close the Women's Center and take the existing director, change her position description, and give her other tasks. The UAF community and members of the Fairbanks community successfully advocated with the Chancellor to keep the Women's Center open and keep it where it is and move the director back into her original position. So in addition, the community requested that the Chancellor appoint an advisory group for the Women's Center. So I encourage you all to think about that and participating and contributing to that group. I think there's a lot that could be done more visibly with the Women's Center. They certainly fulfill a strong academic role with the Women's Studies Program and the Sociology Department. And then the RISE update. I still have not heard from Michelle Hebert, our Sustainability Director, regarding Staff Council's position on this board. I will continue to pursue that. Do you have any questions on any of those items? So one of the things you've probably noticed is our unfinished business stays long and things stay on there a long time. And typically what has happened in the past is these all came in the president's report or the vice president's report. And my goal with putting it this way is so that it's more easier for you to make notes on the specific items and get the word out to your constituents about the latest things. So any other questions then on 7A through H, unfinished business? All right, then we are due for a 5-minute break. For those online, we'll be back in 5 to 10 minutes. You can hold on or you can give a call back in. Thanks, everyone. Okay, I think we're about at the 10-minute, maybe longer, Debbie. Who said that? Oh. All right, members, representatives, if we could take your seats again and go back on the record. Okay, so we are back from break. We have, I'm assuming everyone's still online. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 people online.
Evelyn is still here.
All right. Thank you, Evelyn.
I'm here, Debbie.
No, sir.
Okay. Good. then I'm going to go ahead and go forward with the agenda under new business. Item A, we have listed a reorganization working group, and PIPS, our esteemed past president, is taking the lead on that, and I'll hand it off to her.
Thanks, Duella. So hopefully everybody got the email that I sent maybe an hour or so ago. The hard copies are here on the table in the front. So I guess just a little bit of background of how this came about. I think most people have been involved with the discussion about the possible reorganization of the way we structure staff council over the last year. We've kind of had lots of debate about it here as a group. The chancellor asked me and Duella last year at our first meeting to think about how staff council operates and if we're working in the most effective way we can. And Duella and I both, I think, really appreciated his comments about that and brought to staff council the idea that maybe we should be doing things differently for a number of reasons, some of which were, you know, fairly obvious today, I think, in the sense that Duella was talking about losing our committee chairs and Claudia's panic at what the upcoming elections look like. I certainly remember that feeling last year as president, thinking, oh my God, how are we going to get this done? It just, you know, it doesn't look good when we have 10 people who have accepted nominations and have supervisor approval when we have a lot of seats open to fill. And just kind of the reality of the fact that there's a small group around the table who's doing the work, but we have, you know, 68 seats of representative and alternates. And so really kind of trying to think hard about what our future looks like, how we can be more effective, how we can do business, and not just communicating to administration, but also communicating with our staff members, getting information from staff members, and participating in all the things that we're asked to. When we were at the last EMR meeting, Walker kind of gave us an update of where things were. And I think it was at that meeting where it kind of became obvious, this has probably been obvious to Walker for a long time, but became obvious to me that the role of EMR is to deal with elections, membership, and rules. And it's not necessarily the place to hash out a proposal for a reorganization. And so the group of us that were there thought maybe we should just form a little working group or a working group, to take this issue and talk about it outside of the official staff council meeting. And so that's what I am willing to do. And we have a small group of about 5 people right now. We don't have a plan that we're starting off with. We'd like to meet, I would think, 2 or 3 times this month, get a proposal together to present to staff council at the next meeting, and really kind of focus on this issue in a more concentrated way. If anybody would like to join us, I would love the participation. I think I'm going to leave it at that. I just want to stress that we don't have a plan. We don't have a plan that we're going to come to the group with. I don't have a plan that I'm going to come to the group with at our first meeting to say to try to promote something. I'd like this to be a group activity. I think we're going to get the best result when we have a lot of different opinions. But I do want people who actually want to work on an alternative prospect for staff council. If it's something that if you don't want to see change, I'd like to hear your opinions. But in this working group, I'd really like to see people who are excited about the opportunity to do something different. I'm excited about things that we can do, and I think we reach these little lows sometimes on staff council where I think people are a little bit demoralized when we feel like there's too much work and not enough people, and we're not functioning at the capacity that we could be. And I have a lot of optimism that we can reach that with a good plan put in place. So that may be stumbling a bit, but it's something I think we've all been thinking about for the last year, and so hopefully people have some ideas about what might work well and some problems with what was been suggested before. So I'll leave it at that, invite you to join us. I don't see this working group going more than a couple of months. I'd like to have a solid plan on the table by the next council meeting, and feel free to contact me. If anybody has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
All right.
Great. quicker and fast. Who, who else has used the gold and the joining it?
So far, Kayla Hansen, and she helped draft the statement of interest, which was great. Walker, Nicole Klepfer, and Claudia and I are make up the group so far. So feel free to send me an email if you'd like to be involved.
Any comments from online? Questions? All right. Thank you, Pips. I truly appreciate your taking point on this and the members of your group for their interest and vision. If there are no other questions, let's see. Guest speakers, we did not schedule any for this agenda. We'll move on to item 10, then, internal committee reports. Staff affairs, Mary Sue indicated that they have not met. So for the members of staff affairs, we will work to get a chair. I might, I think maybe I will poll the membership of staff affairs about the meeting schedule for Friday, and maybe I will lead it and see if there's anyone within that group that's interested in taking over as chair. So for the moment, let's plan on there being a staff affairs meeting on Friday. Rural affairs, Brad, do you have anything you want to present or questions for Brad?
Just to add to the report, with thanks to Ashley, who I don't think is here today, our next meeting will be the first Tuesday in November. I don't have that date off the top of my head. Like was mentioned earlier, I am looking for a new chair. I'm open to anyone new or experienced. I'm willing to work with you. And that was my thought for stepping down after 2 years as chair was not because, oh, I'm just so done with this. It was more because I feel like I've done this for 2 years. I think someone else should give it a shot because I thought it was worthwhile and a good way to get some staff council experience. And that's all I've got for rural affairs, if there are no questions.
I just have a comment. Brad, you've done an awesome job, and I totally agree. It's nice to leave on a high and you know, just feel good about what you've done and let somebody else with different ideas come in. So I totally appreciate that.
Nicole?
I think you've done a great job.
Thank you.
Nicole?
I have a feeling my comment will see resistance, but environment of change, would there be a possibility of staff and rural affairs becoming one committee?
Constitutionally, they're two separate committees. The intent
changed, but
certainly it can be changed, but I think that's something we should take very seriously because the intent of the structure was to ensure that rural affairs is represented, the voice of rural employees is represented at council. I know for other committees that I've served on, that's one, there's been a problem with a lack of rural voice or the effort hasn't been made to include and hear the rural voice. Should the body as a whole think changing the Constitution and combining rural affairs and staff affairs, I mean, it's the will of the group and, of course, the chancellor to approve.
Because I like the idea of us having the separate rural voice. However, it's really, we want it to be the responsibility of the rural members to be that voice. Mm-hmm. And we want to be that entity to help them with that voice. And I do realize that staff affairs is kind of involved on many, many facets.
Mm-hmm.
And so I could see how rural affairs could kind of get lost like in that. But at the same time, if the issue is important enough, because regardless of whether they're rural or local, they're staff. And it's important regardless of where you're located.
It's true there is some overlap. Obviously, everything that goes through staff affairs impacts rural staff. And this structure is intended to, you know, to ensure the voice of rural staff, and potentially, possibly, maybe there's another structure that would work. For example, staff affairs, including at least or having at least 20% of its membership or 25% of its membership be rural staff. Maybe that's a way to change it. But maybe that's something that the two of you could discuss. and maybe Brad would be willing to take it to his committee and get some feedback from them.
Certainly, yes.
This is Robert Bank. May I make a comment? It's going to be real quick.
Certainly.
Being a rural campus person, but also having worked at main campus, it's going to be hard to really understand the value of rural, of the Rural Affairs Committee, unless you've served in a rural area. There are a lot of topics that we deal with that we need to get our ducks in a row, separate from staff affairs. If we are thrown into staff affairs, it'll bog down staff affairs, and I fear that either it'll make staff affairs or any other committee ineffective at dealing with greater whole MAU issues, or our problems are so unique, they'll be put on the back burner for the greater MAU issues. One example would be the COLAs, for example. In rural affairs, we're talking about the cost of living adjustments that we get in rural Alaska. Well, there's very little interest in that on the main campuses because there are no COLA incentives on those campuses. And only that, it's a very complex issue. So we really have to work very diligently and in depth on those kind of issues before we can even bring it to staff council to then advocate it up the chain from there. And I think that's the beauty of having rural affairs separate from staff affairs, from staff affairs. That being said, we also have a lot of cooperation. A lot of the members of staff affairs also serve on rural affairs. So there is already an overlap. It just serves as a separate venue for the specific problems that affect rural campuses.
Thank you, Robert, for your comments. I think it's there are ways to resolve it. I think it's an interesting proposal, and I would ask the current chair, Brad, to talk to his committee if his committee comes out opposed, certainly we will table that.
Just to add, I mean, definitely, I think it's a good question, a good suggestion. I think to follow on what Robert's saying, there are issues directly related to rural affairs that are not so related to staff affairs, questions of infrastructure, of healthcare, where, you know, for the general staff body, you know, most of whom I think are at Fairbanks, it's been brought up before, for example, the SRC is great if you're here, or the WIND program, and maybe not so great if you are somewhere else in the state. So questions like that, but I will bring it back. I think you're right that finding a way to increase the rural voice on other committees is a good goal and one that I haven't pushed, but I know previous rural affairs chairs have pushed. So good comments.
All right.
I just wanted to add, I didn't mean to sound like I was totally poo-pooing the idea. I just wanted to add some clarification and perspective to why the two are separate and why there's merits to keeping them separate.
Thank you, Robert. With that, I'll move it back for a moment to staff affairs. Mary Sue did maintain a Unit 7 blog, and now with her stepping down that blog and its roles in question, I am going to ask John Clendenin, the chair of the Communications Committee, to meet with me and discuss that, the future of the blog and the possibilities. If you have any insight or comments or suggestions on that, email John and myself, and we'll go from there. Thank you. Okay, so then next, item C, Walker.
I have a report attached. The elections are going on. That's about it.
We like putting you on the spot, Walker. In fact, you should be sitting up here.
Oh, thank you.
Any questions for Walker then and EMR? All right, then next, D, the Advocacy Committee. Deb Gonzalez, are you still online?
I am. I thought Nicole was taking over, and I don't know what the official way to do that is.
Okay, so for those, I did put you on the spot there, Deb. I thought you were going to explain what happened. essentially, Deb Gonzalez's workload has increased substantially. She's stepping down as chair of the Advocacy Committee. And in the course of a conversation with her membership, et cetera, Nicole Klopfer volunteered to step forward and take over as chair of Advocacy. She is in the process of discussions with John and on combining communications and advocacy and the missions of the two, and hopefully at the November meeting she'll have a report for you on where we are on all of that. The chairs of these committees can be determined by the committees themselves, and that's essentially what happened for the information of the group as a whole. Any questions then on the current status of the advocacy committee?
And I can get Nicole what few notes and things that I have are, so I will do that.
All right. Thank you. If there's none, we'll move to 11A, which is the Staff Healthcare Committee. Gary has talked on it somewhat.
Nothing more, unless there's any questions.
All right. Other than encouraging you all to be prepared to provide feedback and stay aware of what's going on, as a member of that task force, there were some interesting changes proposed or suggested to JHCC. My impression was that the administration was supportive of all of them. So who knows what will come out of this. If there aren't any questions on the Compensation Committee, just some background on that. The Compensation Committee, the Staff Alliance's Compensation Committee, actually met yesterday for the first time over audio. I have appointed Brad Crick and Mary Alice Short as UAF's representatives to that Compensation Committee. The broad kind of vision that I have for that committee, I've said before, this came out of a conversation that I had with President Gamble when we were discussing. He said several times in several different venues that you can't keep giving increases to staff every year. It's not sustainable. And at one point I said, then what else can we do? What else can you do to incentivize and reward your employees for their performance and for their longevity and so on? And from that, we decided to put together another compensation working group, encourage them to come up with some solutions in a similar fashion as that was the healthcare task force. Peter Summers out of UA Southeast is the chair of that committee. And as I said, they got together for the first time yesterday. I would expect it to be very active over the next couple of months, and Brad will probably have a healthy, I hope, report for you come November. Richard. Mary Alice Short.
We're meeting again in 2 weeks, so we'll all have an actual written report for our next staff council meeting.
Any questions on that group? All right, then our next item is 12. In external UAF committee reports submitted in written format, we can, going down the list pretty quickly, see that there hasn't, the Master Planning Committee hasn't met. Britton Anderson, we don't know if they have met or have a report. We'll follow up on that one. The Chancellor's Diversity Action Committee met a couple of weeks ago, and essentially was their last meeting. They wrote up what came out of the discussions were some suggestions to the Chancellor on how to re-energize CDAC over the next year. This student task force that he mentioned this morning is intended, as he told me at one point, to dissolve in May. One of the last items we had on their work list was a design for a revamped Chancellor's Diversity Action Committee, a permanent committee. So as a representative from staff council, I will certainly keep an eye on that. I see planning and budget hasn't met. It doesn't meet usually until the spring. I'm seeing a lot of has not mets all the way down to Debbie Coxon and the Intercollegiate Athletic Council. Have they met?
We have not met.
They have not met. And the People's Endowment Committee, Deb Gonzalez, have they met?
Actually, we did meet. I apologize. I was just looking.
Can you speak up a little bit, Debbie?
I don't think they've actually sent out the announcement yet, but the People's Endowment website is available now, and the announcements will go out for the fall proposals shortly if they haven't already.
Okay. Let's see, then we'll move on to ad hoc committee reports, and John and the Communications Committee have not met. And then next is the Calendar Committee. Brad?
Most of it's in the written report. If you do look at it, please excuse the terrible, terrible formatting job that I did where I left all of my old notes sitting on the report. It's bad. We're meeting again on Friday. I want to thank everyone who passed along our request for photos to their units. We had a lot of really great photos. I want to say there are at least 20 or 30, and just in my favorites, there's 5 or 6 that I think would be wonderful. So I think we're really, really ready to go forward.
All right. Then I think the next item on the agenda is roundtable discussion. Go ahead, if you will,